Welcome to PCMC Holiday Spectacular. Anthony, how are you?
I'm great. I'm in the holiday spirit.
Me too. I'm in a jolly good spirit. Today we are celebrating
the finest Christmas movie of all time.
The holidays with 1999's Eyes Wide Shut, directed by Stanley Kubrick. Now, listen. I don't know what a Christmas movie really is.
Yeah, let's not get diehard on this.
Exactly. I have a note here that I wrote to myself. I'm getting dangerously close into the guy who thinks it's
a personality
to say Die Hard's a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
But this is a movie that takes place during Christmas, and I think the iconography of Christmas is all over it.
For sure.
And
for sure.
You know, we the last couple of years we've had a very wholesome holiday. We did The Grinch, we did What did we do last year? Christmas Carol.
Let's get naughty.
Let's do a bad thing.
God damn it.
So Eyes Wide Shut, based on the 1926 novella Trauma Novelle, which means dream story, by Arthur Schnitzler.
Never read any Schnitzler.
Okay.
Gotta say, yeah. Watch this movie for the first time yesterday. Yeah. You've seen it how many times?
A lot.
Okay.
Saw it in the theater when it came out.
Yeah, I remember
too young to
that.
See it. Too young
I remember
to see
that.
It, but they let you in the 90s.
Yeah. And read about this book, and by God, is it very faithful.
Yeah, except it takes place in Vienna, not New York.
Okay, we'll get to that.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about it right now.
Sure,
let's talk about it. Since you were talking about decorations anyway. It's fascinating to me that it took the novella takes place in Vienna during Mardi Gras.
Interesting.
This takes place in New York during Christmas, which is interesting because they're both big celebrations,
yeah,
cultural celebrations. But at the same time, Mardi Gras is like a celebration of debauchery,
where right, Christmas it's a bacchanal,
is
yeah.
Right, and Christmas is supposed to be like a very wholesome holiday,
right?
So it's an interesting change.
It is very interesting change.
Kubrick could have done something, could have set it in New Orleans during Mardi Gras,
and
it would have been
Year's
made more literal. Year's even.
Yeah,
you're right.
Right.
Every set is dripping with Christmas decorations except for the one.
Right.
But anyway, go ahead.
I want to lay some ground rules. So, since the documentary Room 237,
mm-hmm,
the discourse around this movie and the discourse around Kubrick in general has sort of slipped into Cuckoo Bananas area.
Yeah, the Room 237 is one of the craziest goddamn things I've ever seen.
Well, the thing about that movie is I like some of it. Some of it is post-structural criticism. It's, this is how I read the movie. But when they go, this is how I read the movie, and I think Kubrick meant it, that's where I go, no.
Yeah. Or this is a Kubrick.
Or real
bananas, like I'm wearing an aluminum hat. And
right,
like,
Kubrick did the moon landing.
And they're going to come find me.
Right.
For spreading the truth.
Right. Kubrick faked the moon landing, which even by then he had been... could not make more fucking less sense.
What's
cinematic about the moon landing? You would get any schmuck with a camera. Why would you get an important filmmaker who already had public leftist
it's
leanings?
Ridiculous. What I don't understand about Room 237 is that that movie I feel is like almost irresponsible in that it presents every interpretation of The Shining as if they're all equally valid, and never like the movie doesn't present the crazy ones as really crazy.
Right.
So it's like, is the movie endorsing all of these interpretations?
I don't know.
But anyway, yes, there's no secret fucking messages that he was sending through Eyes Wide Shut or any of his films.
Right, right.
He's an artist.
Right. And I do, that's the thing, like movies like this, I think, do beg interpretation because they are dense and they're clearly rife with all sorts of ideas about culture and stuff.
But this wasn't Kubrick like blowing the whistle on the government and got him killed.
Right. That's the other thing. That's the other big thing with this movie is that it's about either the Illuminati,
right,
or it's about
like government officials.
You're right. Like there's a cabal and this is really happening.
Right. And him dying before it was finished just adds to the conspiracy.
Right. It's So that's one ground rule.
Okay.
The second ground rule is that this is like a very talked about, very written about movie. So I'm just, I tried to, even though I've heard and read a lot of that stuff, I stayed away from it in preparation for this episode because I just want it to be about what I think about the movie. But inevitably, I will probably repeat other people's ideas. Mm-hmm. And if I remember that there are other people's ideas, I will credit them. Mm-hmm. There's possibilities that I will echo what other people think because I just think that as well.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people talk about whether the protagonist is gay. I thought that as well.
Yeah, so...
But it's not, I'm not getting it from someone else.
So I haven't... I've just... Like I said, I saw this movie within the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
I've not read anything about it other than like a quick Wikipedia page of like... I was curious about if it was really filmed in New York, which most of it wasn't.
No. No, not at all.
Which adds to the eeriness of it.
Right, because even the street names aren't real names.
Yeah, and it's London. And you could tell there's some clues in there that it's London. But I also... One interpretation I had in my mind through the whole thing was like, is Tom Cruise's character gay? And I didn't get that from anywhere. So actually you saying that validates me.
Right, okay.
Because I thought maybe it was just me trying to read gay into everything.
Right.
Did you notice the London, like it was like, there's one part where he's being trailed.
But a lot of it sets.
A lot of it sets, but then a lot of the street stuff is either on it, like that one little set of the West Village is a set. But then there's other places where he's walking down London streets, but they put New York signposts and phone booths there. And you could, one of the tip offs that it's London is the, there's like, there are a bunch of hotels in a row. And they're, it's like, they're all house. It's like Darnell House, Nikon House, which is like a very English thing.
Right.
Not a New York thing.
Well, you know, as I was watching
like Soho House.
As whatever. I was watching the movie, I was like, you know, this is 1999, so this is over 20 years ago. I was like, was this a version of New York that ever existed? Was there like tea rooms where you go and you can get coffee and just like read the paper alone? You know what I mean? Like, was that ever a thing?
I think so. I mean, yeah.
Or like the jazz club he goes to. Like
the Sonata Jazz Club? Yeah. Yeah, that's fake. Like, that's... But was there something like that in the Village? Probably.
Yeah.
It's weird that the...
Costume store.
The entire movie, like, basically only takes place on the Upper West Side and the West Village. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not... Those aren't close to each other.
Right.
But it's just two places. It's like his... debauchery of his and the Odyssey portion of it is all in the West Village, and then his home is on Central Park West, uptown.
And I think, and they're never clear on where the mansion is, but I get the feeling it's like upstate a little bit.
That it's supposed to be Long Island.
Okay.
But it was actually in England.
Right, it was actually in England.
The only
I think class and socioeconomic status
for sure
is a big thing of what this movie's about.
From the very beginning when he's like, I went to medical school with that guy. He never finished.
Right.
He dropped out.
Right.
From the beginning.
Yeah.
I think those two characters had sex.
They seem like they might have.
Yeah.
Okay. So the other thing I want to say is I think this is a completed film. He died towards the end of... when it first
Do
came
out... Do people not think it's completed?
Yes. And people think... Well, he died making it. He did it. He died during post-production. Would he have kept tweaking it? Probably.
What proof do they have?
He put out Psycho with an ending scene and then took it back and removed the ending
Psycho,
scene.
Not Psycho.
I mean The Shining.
The Shining, yeah. Yes. Like,
so he was always fucking with his movies. So he probably would have fucked with it more, but in no way feels not done.
What evidence do they have to argue that
I don't know.
What choices are made say aren't him?
But the discourse around the time was that it's an incomplete movie.
See, I thought that he died during the making of AI.
No. He wasn't even really making AI. AI was just something he always like wanted Spielberg to do, and then Spielberg did it after he died.
He wanted Spielberg to do it?
Yeah.
I thought he wanted to do it, and then Spielberg took
over
after
he was
he
like, no, you should do it. And Spielberg That's was like, no.
Because it's not a Kubricky. I mean, it's a really little not. Bit, but it's really Spielbergy.
Right, it's very Spielbergy.
All right. Anyway, so he died when this was in post.
Yeah.
So maybe is it like soundtrack things? Is it like editing things?
I don't know.
It felt very Kubricky to me when I watched it.
I don't know what to point to because to me it seems very clearly complete.
Well, what's interesting to me in my viewing is that, like I said, I've never seen it before, but I know of it, of course, and I know that it was Kubrick's last movie and that he died before it came out.
Yeah.
So I always think of it as like his newest film.
Yeah.
Which it is, technically. Yeah. But then watching it last night, it's like the thing of like, God, the 90s were a lot longer ago than I thought they were. Sure. I was watching it and I was like, this feels old.
It's so filmy. And then
it's so filmy. Filmic. And like, it feels very... I mean, I know it's the same director, but it feels spiritually like a sister film to The Shining.
Yes.
Even aesthetically.
Yes, I agree.
And like what's that transition style that he does in this and The Shining where it fades from one image to the next?
It'll dissolve.
Dissolve, which yeah. you don't see in movies anymore.
No, because it's too slow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's got to be faster.
That's it. All over The Shining, it's all over this.
Yes.
And I don't know if it's in a lot of his other movies.
Yeah, no, I agree. It is aesthetically like The Shining.
And I feel like Tom Cruise's performance is very similar to Jack Nicholson's performance.
Yeah, I agree.
The stiltedness.
And also people question whether...
Jack Nicholson was gay. Yeah.
Yeah.
The stiltedness when he's speaking to his child.
Yeah.
Reminded me of Jack Nicholson with Danny.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you're doing your homework. You got them all right.
Yeah.
Great job, Helena. Like,
yeah.
The weird, like, everything just being like a little off.
Yeah.
It felt very Shining to me. So it feels very Kubricky.
Yes, I agree. So. I should say, directed by Stanley Kubrick, screenplay by Kubrick and Frederick Raphael. It does have a score, but besides the score, what's most famous is it uses the Waltz number 2 by Dmitri Shostakovich.
Is that the dun 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 dun?
No. The dun 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 is a musica. Ricercata by Gregory Leggetti.
I was once murdered on film to that
song. Yes, I guess I remember. Waltz number 2 is...
Oh, from the beginning and the route. Yeah.
So it's built on classical, and then you've
which is kind of an upbeat song.
Right. And then you've got Baby Did a Bad, Bad Thing by Chris Isaac.
Yeah, which is... That's an interesting little scene, Lit.
Yeah. Well, the first scene is Nicole Kidman dropping a dress, yeah. And we see her butt.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to, as I often do, I'm going to immediately contradict something I just said.
Okay.
Which is, I do have a theory that I ascribe to Kubrick as a filmmaker. I think he hired this hot, famous married couple on purpose because he... in semiotics, right? Every sign has a meaning. I think celebrity is meaningful. And I think saying, all right, Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman, he's a fucking weirdo. She's interesting. The paparazzi loves them. They're so big in the press. I'm going to put them in this movie about a bad marriage on purpose. Mm-hmm. And also, Tom Cruise is a bad actor. He's not good at acting. So
I kept,
because he's so fake, and I think there's almost something ironic in Kubrick being like, I'm gonna get this fake guy who basically is a mask and have him play a version of himself and not even really realize that the reason I gave him the job is because I wanted his fake smile.
See, okay, I can get on board with that. I don't know, not that I'm a Cruise head, I was questioning whether or not his bad acting was actually bad acting or if it was a choice and if he, the character, was always acting
in his life. He, the character, is always acting.
It's like giving like Patrick Bateman kind of.
I do.
And when he's always flashing his badge like, yeah. I'm a doctor.
And he's got that fake smile. That
fake smile, yeah.
But doesn't Tom Cruise also have that fake smile?
Yes.
And aren't there rumors about Tom Cruise being gay?
For
and
sure.
And hiding behind Scientology.
Yes.
So
I think she's a good actress.
She's great.
I think what I didn't like about the film that I didn't expect because I'd never seen it before, I thought it was going to be the two of them. It's really a Tom Cruise movie, and she has two monologues that are very good.
Yes, that's very true. And she's got a lot of great looks.
Yeah, great looks.
So
you think that he cast them not like as stunt casting almost.
Yeah.
But so like, okay, so I was thinking this last night, like if this were made today, who would the couple be? Would it be like J-Lo and Ben Affleck?
Yes.
Someone like that.
Now, to talk about the stilted things. So yes, he is. The character is always sort of lying. And the character is always playing this role.
Dr. Hart, whatever.
I'm important.
Yeah.
Which he only, because as a doctor, he's a servant to the upper class. He's not really part of it.
Right.
Which is really smacked in his face at the end when he's like, you came in a taxi and everyone else came in a...
Yeah.
Like,
because it's like,
because the whole movie is like throwing money around.
Because he's wealthy,
but he's not
one rich. Of the elite. Yeah,
yeah.
He's not invited to the party. Look at his apartment.
Yeah.
Versus Dr. Ziegler's mansion.
Right.
Which that's the only building that's a real New York mansion.
Really?
Yeah. In New York City,
and that character is, I think, fascinating.
Yeah, very. So like that guy is like fucking rich.
Right, and you never know what he does.
Right.
Right.
You have like a nice apartment on the Upper West Side.
The perfect way to describe where he is socially is he's not important enough or powerful enough to be invited to the party, but he's too important to just kill.
Yeah.
That's why they go out of their way to just like get him to shut up and stop. Because they just kill the girl. They just kill Nick Nightingale, the piano player. They just murder him.
Here's my question.
But wait, I'm sorry.
Because we're getting ahead, I know.
I know. But just to... I forgot to circle back what I wanted to, which is Kubrick is famous for doing 1,000 takes. And he does that to make you stilted. He it's almost like rope-a-doping. So I'm sure...
So he's the opposite of Woody.
Right. No, he's not.
Woody Allen only does 2, and that's it.
He does a million. So by the time, he's a little like Hitchcock, and I think he doesn't respect actors very much. Yeah. And he just wants you to do what he wants you to do.
Pushing them to the limit.
He's pushing them to the point where they're no longer doing their own choices.
Right.
Like, get your acting out of the way, and then I'm going to make you do it, and make you do it, and make you do it, and make you do it. And then by the millionth time, you are just sort of doing
just saying rotely. The words. Yeah.
And that's part of the stilted nature of it.
Like a little bit of frustration anecdote, in there.
Ziegler, who's played by Sidney Pollack, the director, was originally played by Harvey Keitel.
Oh my God, I thought you were going to say Harvey Weinstein.
No, Harvey Keitel. And first day of shooting, he does like 2 takes and he's like, do it again. Doing his Kubrick thing. And by like take 50, Harvey Keitel's like, fuck you, fuck this movie, fuck everyone. And he just leaves.
I love that.
He was just not having that type of thing at all.
Hey.
So yeah. Yes.
Okay. What are you... I'm still... I feel like I have to watch this movie like 10 more times to really
interpret it. And I get more out of it every time I watch it.
I think it's... I'm hoping it's interesting for the listener that I've seen it only once and you've seen it a million times.
Sure.
What do you make of all, like, of all the seemingly gratuitous female nudity? Is it there to shock you and titillate you? Like, the movie opens with a movie star getting naked. It's the first shot. And it's like, whoa, there's Nicole Kidman totally naked.
See, it's so funny that you asked that because I don't know how to answer that question because, in fact, when I watch it, I think given our internet porn world, I find it all very cookie cutter.
I mean,
it could be. Think about the shit you could see online. Like,
yeah,
like
but this it's, is before
it's
all, that.
It's but still, it feels like an old man, which was Kubrick was an old man. It's an old man thinking what he would want a sex party to be, which is people in elegant masks, tall, statuesque women with sensible pubic hair. You know what I mean? Well, like, it's not like now you would have fucking furries. And this guy's sucking that guy.
Yeah.
And this one's, you know
what I
mean?
There were a few gay couples if you
right, right. Yes, there were a few gay couples.
The CGI people blocking the fucking.
They look like insane. They look like Sims characters.
Yeah, insane. I'd love to see the version without that.
Yes.
Roger Ebert calls it the Austin Powers version, I read.
Well, because he makes the point, if it's point of view, what am I reading? Are you supposed to be telling me that Tom Cruise can't see anything?
Yeah.
Because how can it be point of view when he's not seeing it?
Yeah. I don't know. I do feel like, I don't know.
Well, Kubrick has been accused of sexism and objectifying women through his whole career.
I mean, there are a lot of tits in this movie. Yeah.
I'll agree. I think Alan Cumming is...
I mean, you don't see Tom Cruise's dick. You don't see any man naked.
And I think that's one of my criticisms. When they catch him and they're like, disrobe, they should have had him disrobe.
Yeah.
But like, he's not good... his movies are all white people. Like, he's not good representing people of other races. He's not. Look at what he does to, like, Holler in The Shining.
Yeah, a character that survives in the novel that he kills in the movie.
Right, and he just makes him, like, yeah. And he's not great with, yeah, like, even, like, Alan Cumming, who I love, like, he's, like, almost, like, he is a real gay man, but he's almost, like, a gay caricature.
He's, like, that scene is so interesting. It's, like, he seems like he's, everybody seems like they're in love and they're just so deeply attracted to Tom Cruise, including me. Like, when I was watching this movie, I was like, I've never been attracted to Tom Cruise before, but I find him sexy in this movie.
Right.
But, like, his character, the character who, like, kisses him and says, I love you.
Yes.
And he's like, I barely know who you are. Like, everyone just seems, like, so enamored with him.
Right.
But he does, I don't know.
But it's isn't, like, that a perfect character for you to hire Tom Cruise to play?
Right. Yeah, I get that. I agree with you. But that was a weird little scene with Alan Cumming, because it's like Alan Cumming is just, like, desperate for Tom Cruise to, like, fuck him.
Yeah.
It feels like.
Yes.
But he's telling him something awful.
Right.
Very similar to the scene with the, he's right about to fuck her, and then she says Domino has HIV.
Yes.
Which is so weird.
Right.
And I'm still, like, trying to figure out what to even make of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It just feels like everybody wants to have sex with Tom Cruise.
Right.
And, like, even when they are talking about all horrible things happening.
Yeah.
Everyone but Nicole Kidman, his wife.
Right.
Who wants to fuck some other guy, a naval officer.
But even that, but that's the thing. Unless you count when he kisses other people or when he touches that one.
He never really cheats on
her. He never cheats. She never cheats on him.
But it seems like he's very willing to cheat on her.
No, I disagree. And this is why some people... I, by the way, don't read him as gay, but I think it's an interesting reading.
Yeah.
I read him... as impotent. He has so many chances to cheat, and he doesn't.
Well, and he's like, it why? Seems why like
does
with
he
the,
leave?
With,
why does he leave Domino?
But it seems like with Domino's roommate, he's about to, and then she stops it.
I think he would have found a way out. I think he always... He could have fucked the daughter of the patient that died. Right?
Who,
like, she was like, I love you. He could have fought. He was with Domino. While he's with her, Domino, by the way, played by the incredibly gorgeous Vanessa Shaw.
I know. From Hocus Pocus. When I saw her, when I got eyes on her, and I was like, is that the girl from Hocus Pocus?
She's so beautiful in this movie. The shot of the close up of them kissing is like one of my favorite kisses in all movies.
It's insane that's like just like 2 years prior, she was in Hocus Pocus.
Yeah. And it's really her second weird psychosexual movie if you count Ladybugs.
yeah. She's also in The Hills Have Eyes, where she's raped. She's
great in it.
You know, now that you say that, I do feel like you could read this movie as two people in a marriage that's not great who are just too afraid to leave it, because it seems like they're both obviously attracted to other people and both kind of want to cheat.
Right.
But ultimately are just too afraid.
I have a more positive reading of it.
Do you think that they really love each other?
I think they're
I actually do think they love each other.
Yes.
It seems like they are, from the one scene we get, it seems like they have a pretty healthy sex life.
Yes, of course.
But I think there's something about marriage that, I feel like the movie is saying something about marriage that's not, it's not all positive.
I think that the movie's saying marriage is like a dream that you have to choose to believe in.
Yeah.
Okay. But my hot take is I think that they're a great couple. I think they do love each other, and I think they choose to believe.
Choose each other.
Yeah, and they choose to believe in the dream.
What do you
think? That's what the end is about.
Well, I was going to say, I was shocked by that ending.
When she said,
when she says we should fuck.
That's the last thing that happens. Yeah.
What do you, I haven't even had time to process that. What do you make of that? Do you think that's just like, we need to prove to each other? We need to rekindle.
Yeah, we need to reestablish one of the strong connections we have, which is sex. Clearly sex is a strong connection to them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. And I think this is why in some ways the movie was not critically received positively when it first came out, which is I think people were expecting a sexier movie.
Yeah,
and it's not that sexy a movie. There's nudity. There's a lot of female nudity, but there's no male nudity. There's very little fucking. There's very little eroticism.
That's why I asked the question about cold. Like, what do you make of all the female nude? I do feel like there's a lot of female nudity.
Yeah.
And
it's very cold. And I mean, they are objects.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, and then there's the character who's killed. What was the deal with... See, it's so confusing.
Yeah.
When Ziegler's like, what if I told you that was all fake? Is he lying?
I wanted to pose that to you. But again, I think he isn't. Here's what I really think. I think... They're like, he's the whoever's really in charge. Mm-hmm. And some people think Ziegler's really in charge. I disagree. Ziegler's not the guy in the red cloak at all. I think whoever's really in charge, whoever they are, Rudy Giuliani, whoever's really there, is like,
Harvey Weinstein.
He won't stop. This guy won't stop asking questions, and we're going to have to kill him. But you're his friend. Talk to him one last time and see if you could get him to shut up.
See,
and I think Ziegler gives him a convenient lie. Like, I think, like, when, because he's so clearly bullshitting when he's like, listen, they didn't kill that girl. She was a drug addict. She was going to die anyway. Oh, Nick, your friend, you're wrong about a few things. They didn't kill him. They put him on a plane. He's probably home fucking his wife right now. It's bullshit, and Tom Cruise knows it's bullshit, and I think Sidney Pollack knows that Tom Cruise knows, but it's like, I'm giving you a moral out. I'm giving you a lie to believe. So you can walk away and not realize you killed two. You had two people killed.
Yeah,
because even the way he puts it is like, suppose I tell you,
it
was all a charade.
That's why I asked the question, because it doesn't. It's not convincing at all.
No, I don't think it is. I think he is really in great danger, and I think they really do kill her. They really do kill the piano guy, and I think.
But then,
and I think they would have killed him if.
They said the letter says, like, this is your second final warning.
Right.
Do you think that, but then why include that scene of her, like, almost ODing in the beginning?
What do you mean? Oh, to prove that she's a drug addict?
Yeah.
I
think that you could read that as, like, he did him a favor in that beginning scene. So it's like, if you read Ziegler as the guy in the red cloak, like, that's why he's not killed.
I mean, I do think some of that's true. And interestingly enough, even though she's supposed to be the same character as the mysterious woman in the mask who helps him, it's not the same actress. And the woman in the mysterious woman, that's how she's credited, is voiced by Cate Blanchett, uncredited. So even though they're both supposed to be whatever her name was, Abigail.
Mandy.
They're not really played by the same person.
Do you think they are supposed to actually be or not?
I don't know.
I gotta watch it again. Now in hindsight, like, were those two girls in the beginning part of the cult?
I don't think so. Hmm. I don't think he...
That was another opportunity where he could have fucked them, but he didn't. Yeah.
And there's the whole thing with her and the Hungarian guy who's, like, coming onto her
heart. Oh, yeah.
And she's, like, flirting with him hard.
I'm married, yeah.
And she chooses not to fuck him. They always choose to not do it. And I think that's human nature. Like, you are animals. You do want to fuck other people. In the end, a good marriage is not necessarily that
not
you are
attracted.
Never attracted
to
other people. It's that you make a bond and you believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that shakes them up, the thing that shakes him up is she says, I would have cheated with this guy if I had the chance. And not only that, I would have given up our life, our kid, you, just for the that's how much I wanted to fuck this guy.
That monologue I thought was so good, because there is something that's so, like, taboo about saying, like...
And a woman saying I would give up my motherhood.
Saying, like, my animal instincts, like, there are sometimes when you see somebody who you are just so attracted to in the moment that you're like, I would give up absolutely everything to just have sex with that person.
And it starts with her laughing laughing at him while he says, like, I just have faith
in
you.
Women are different.
Yeah. And he goes, I have faith in you. Yeah. And then she's like, you shouldn't, because, and then she says, and the next day I realized he was gone and I was relieved.
Yeah.
Because she would have given up everything just to fuck that guy.
Yeah. And I like
and
that
that's
you
what
never,
shakes them. And
never
it's really
seen...
nothing, right? I mean, it's huge.
No, it's just a... And then he comes back later when she has the dream.
Which is another weird thing.
Which is really weird.
Well, that's another thing. Some people think she's a part of the cult. I disagree. I don't think it's ever...
I don't think so at
Yeah,
all.
I don't think...
What? Why? Because she says there were other hundreds of people
around.
Right,
because it seems like she's describing it, and she puts the mask next to the bed.
See,
but
did
she
do that?
I think she did do that.
Well, so
like,
where was
explain
it?
This. If he put it in the... After he came home, he puts it in the... I think they have like a vault or something.
But then when he brings the cloak and stuff back, he looks like he genuinely thought the mask was in there. I read it as... Somebody from the cult was fucking with him, broke into his house, took it, and then put it on the bed.
No, I think he knew. I think he wanted to keep it for some reason.
Okay, that's interesting. I just got to watch it again, I think.
There's so many ideas, and there's nothing. I mean, I go back and forth on things, you know. And what's weird is it's like a hat on a hat, because you can have a whole movie about a guy whose wife tells him she almost cheated on him, and he goes out and almost fucks a sex worker,
right.
And he goes to a club. You could have that whole movie without the Illuminati,
right.
Sex, but then in the middle of this movie,
it becomes like a thriller.
Is this insane, yeah. And truly, I think, scary,
yeah.
Sequence. And then it's like, well, two stanzas, because then after that, in the middle, it just repeats he repeats the same people, yeah. That he saw. So it's sort of like the beginning, end kind of fold into each, yeah. Other.
And then it's really interesting that he shows up, he drives out to Long Island again to the house. And right. The minute he arrives, a guy drives up and gives him an envelope addressed to him.
Right.
Which, was that the envelope that Nick had?
Oh, I don't know.
Remember, like, he tried to hand me an envelope, Alan Cummings says.
Oh, maybe. No, because it says,
Stop asking questions.
This is your second warning. I hope this is sufficient.
Yeah. I don't know. It's so weird. So Nick just died.
They killed Nick.
Yeah.
That's what I say. Tom Cruise is in this weird
place.
So
that part when they're walking him and he's being blindfolded, could you read that as they're walking him out to kill him? Because I read it as just like they're walking him to the piano. No. Oh, yeah. So obviously he dies later, but he says that he plays piano blindfolded.
Right.
And you see him being walked through the party in a blindfold.
Yeah.
But
I'm not sure.
Is that them walking him out to then take him back to the hotel and
Yeah, I'm not sure if in that moment that's what that's.
And also there was definitely a gay subtext of Alan Cumming being he came home with two big guys.
Right.
Can we just explore the gay thing for a second?
No, please, let's go.
I think there is definitely an interpretation that, with a lot of evidence to back it up, that the part of the mask that Tom Cruise wears is that he's gay.
Yes.
And that I do think that even those – this is going to sound weird, but for some reason, even in those not flashbacks, because it didn't actually happen, but in him imagining her having sex with the
naval officer
– it almost felt voyeuristic, as in, is he jealous that she would get to have sex with a man?
And that's really interesting. That's really interesting. And I do think, for me, the strongest queer vibes comes from
him and Nick.
Yeah. And especially, because Nick dropped out and,
yeah.
Did something different. And Nick seems – they seem to have, a pass with each other, yes. And almost a little secret with them.
Yeah. Also, the fact his name is Nick Nightingale – it's interesting because nightingales sing.
Yeah.
And somebody you associate singing like a bird is when you are pressured into telling on someone.
Yeah.
But then also there's Florence Nightingale.
Yeah. 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 Interesting.
Like a nurse.
Yeah.
Obviously being a physician is central to his identity.
Right.
Or at least his outward, how he presents himself.
Well, I think it's part of his mask. It's part, and it's where he gets his money,
yeah.
And his so-called clout,
yeah.
And it's
But then you see him at work, and it's like
a rinky-dink,
yeah. It's like a little private practice, yeah. And he's messing with somebody's leg,
right?
And then at one point, there's a beautiful woman who's got her tits out,
right? Right.
But then it's followed by a little kid who is feeling his glands. It's not glamorous,
right? Probably his biggest. He makes a lot of money. That he lives in a beautiful place in the city. But probably his connection to Ziegler is his biggest connection to that world of power.
Right. But and also keeping
in mind, because he's Ziegler's doctor.
Right. I mean, also just to go back to what you said a second ago, it was the 90s. Living on the West Side was a little bit humbler than it is now.
Sure.
Living on the Upper West Side.
But they have art on their walls.
They do. They have money, but now you are rich if you live in a building like that. I don't think the Upper West Side was kind of residential. It was not glamorous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let me ask you about...
And it's kind of small. The apartment's kind of small.
Yes. I want to talk about the Wizard of Oz references.
Yeah, okay. So there are a lot. So they say there's over the... Where the rainbow ends.
The two models that are taking him away.
Then the costume shop.
They say we're going to go over the rainbow.
Yeah, the costume shop is rainbow.
And also... And I only got this today watching it for the 10th time. The models say, we're going to take you to where the rainbow ends. And then he's summoned upstairs. And the next scene is Ziegler's bathroom. And the walls have a like molding of green and gold, which is like the Emerald Wizard. City. Yes, like, yes, like the
Ziggler. Yeah. So that would support the theory that Ziggler is the guy, is the Red Cloak.
Right.
It's like the man behind the mask.
Yeah, yeah.
It's also all his like his imagination is in black and white.
Yes, that's it. Yeah,
it's like the juxtaposition between black and white and color.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it. I mean, I think obviously it's like.
And also like the rainbow flag is gay.
It's an Odyssey, but also there's the gay subtext. Right, right.
But even then, he could fuck them. He doesn't.
Yeah.
But that's what makes. But she is jealous. Like, she really does. When he says you're trying to pick a fight, she is.
Yeah.
Like, I've watched that scene so many times. It's such a tour de force from Nicole.
She is. She's turning this is every word to the he movies. Says. Yeah. Even.
Yes.
Heartbreak feels good in a place like this.
No, because she says. He goes, what was that older man doing? She was like, he was trying to fuck me. And then he goes, that makes sense because you're a beautiful woman. And then she goes.
She's like, what are you trying to say?
That a man would only talk to me if he wanted to fuck me? It's like, but you just said he wanted to. You're the one who said it. Like, I'm just agreeing with you. But she was picking a fight because she wanted to talk about the two models. And she wanted to tell that story.
But here's the thing. If she wanted to tell a story, why hasn't she told it before?
Me? Well, I think the story scared her.
Yeah.
And I think. He says, like, she goes, why are you never jealous of me?
Yeah.
And I think she wanted to make him jealous. And in some ways, at the end, when he comes back and he cries and he tells her, I feel like maybe this is really a simple story of he just wanted to go find a story, too, to tell her a story.
It's so very, they both,
so they're equal. They're now on, they're back on an equilibrium with each other.
You know, that reminds me a lot of White Lotus season 2.
I'm not familiar.
Oh, you haven't watched White Lotus?
No, I haven't.
It's very, for the White Lotus heads out there.
Yeah.
That's kind of like what happened to White Lotus season 2.
Okay.
Yeah. I do think that she was definitely like trying to get a rise out of him, trying to make him jealous. And I do think that there is like, in both of those monologues, she's delivering this monologue.
She's Jada Pinkett Smith.
Yeah, she's like shitting on him twice.
She's like, we were laughing at you.
Yeah, in the dream, she's like, I wanted to embarrass you. I wanted to laugh at you.
Yeah, and he comes in and she's laughing in her sleep and then he wakes her up and then she starts crying.
Right, because she was laughing at him.
Right.
It's so...
she cannot stop humiliating him. Yeah,
she really can't. What's going on with Lily Sobieski? So the
little sex worker.
So the father is like pimping out his daughter.
It doesn't seem like that's what he's doing in the beginning, but then when he comes back and we see the two Asian guys are very, the way they're depicted is not great.
Right.
We see them leaving and Tom Cruise is like, you said you were going to call the cops.
Right. But then he's like, if you need anything else, and he puts his arm around her.
So like, I don't know. Did he come to that decision last night or?
Or did
was he always?
Or did he
was he always going to?
I don't know. Yeah. Or was it?
Well, there's shades of Lolita there too, right? Because Kubrick made Lolita.
Yeah, and she seems weirdly happy through the whole thing.
She seems, again, this is not great depiction. She seems like the stereotype of a nymphette.
Yeah.
Like she doesn't feel like she's being abused. She feels like she likes it.
Yeah.
And in fact, she whispers something in Tom Cruise's ear.
What does she say?
An early script that you can find online has her tell him what kind of cloak to wear, which would imply she's been to the parties.
That's so interesting and scary.
Yes.
So I also, I don't know if I didn't do much reading.
Uh-huh.
But I did see somewhere that there's a mask in Domino's apartment and that Domino is a type of mask.
Interesting. Things like that are fun to chew on.
Right.
But I also.
It doesn't mean she was there.
I also feel like everyone saying everyone's involved. She could have. I mean, she. Obviously, they get sex workers.
They get sex workers
to go. So she could have at some point been to one of the parties. I think that's possible.
Yeah.
It's so funny, by the way, that like. How does he know that it's like got to be a classy mask? Like, what if he like came show up like the Wolfman and they're all like. Well,
who tells him?
Well, Nick, I guess, tells him what to get. But still. It's just funny that they're all like classy masks.
Yeah. God, that scene. That's the only. I noticed that like that's the only scene where there's no Christmas dressing at all.
Yes.
There's no Christmas lights. There's no Christmas tree.
Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing. Like, the more I watch the movie, the more I think. See, we've got this from this movie, we have like this cultural idea of like, oh, it's an Eyes Wide Shut party. Yeah. But I actually think that the set, it's not a sex party. I think that's part of it, but I think it's actually more of a cult or religious thing.
Yeah, because they're chanting. They're chanting.
He's got like incense. The incense thing, yeah. Like a priest would have. It seems like there's a ritual going on that's not about sex, really. And then you can go and have sex.
And that, because, there's language that's normalized within that context. Because, like, when she says, I'm willing to redeem him.
Yeah.
And then he's like, do you understand the gravity of what you're saying?
Yeah.
Which basically is like, I'm willing to be the sacrifice.
I'll die for him.
Yeah.
Right.
So was he there to be killed? Was he there as a sacrifice? Did Nick send him there?
Oh, I don't think so. Because I think Nick really didn't want him to go.
But then why did he tell him so much?
I don't know. Because he wanted to, like, he probably feels inferior that he left. He dropped out of medical school and he's, you know, this transient jazz musician and this other guy's this big shot doctor.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Levels
of class.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Right. Tom Cruise thinks he's really hot shit, but he's not. Like, compared to the people at the party.
What about when he, like, gets bitched on the street by that group of guys?
Well, that's another big thing that people go, why are they so homophobic toward him?
Yeah.
How are they reading? That's, like, that's all they do is call him the F word. And
over and over again.
San Francisco, like, immediately they clock
really
him.
Weird.
Yeah, right.
And maybe that's where, when I was watching it, I was like, wait, is he gay? Because I did have that thought of, like, why are they just, they see him walking down the street and they target him as gay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then push him. And then there's also, like, that's kind of when he's knocked down a peg, too.
Yeah.
Where it's like, he just gets, like, tossed into a car.
Yeah.
And then just, like, walks away.
Yeah.
Doesn't say anything back.
Right.
Like, he just gets, like, for lack of a better word, like, totally emasculated.
Yeah.
And humiliated.
Yeah.
And then it's like, is that part of the motivation to go try and fuck, you know, another woman?
But he never, but he's so.
But he never does, yeah.
He's so impotent. He never does it. He never did. He could have so fucked Domino. They're kissing on the bed and then Nicole Kidman calls. She's doing her milk and cookies and cigarettes. Incredible. And he says, she goes, how long are you going to be? And he goes, oh, I might be a few more hours. So he's covered himself.
Yeah.
And then he goes back to the bed and he says, like, I guess I should leave. Why? You just covered it. You could just fuck her right there.
Yeah.
Now, later on, when we find out she has HIV, we're supposed to feel like he...
He almost...
Yeah, he dodged a bullet.
Yeah.
Although people... I've read that people read that into the gay subtext of it being
for
about
sure.
AIDS.
Yes.
And it being about, like, even like him going back to different people is like going back to the people, like, if you have an HIV, you should go back to the people you've
your
been
sexual
with
partners,
and let them know.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating to think of him as gay, but to me.
But you don't think that that's authorial? Like, you don't think.
Well, I don't think any of it's authorial, you know, but to me, it's more interesting. I don't know. There's something about that's too easy for me. I think he is heterosexual, but I think he's more, to me, I see him more as impotent in a way. Mm. He's
it's also, there's a certain reduction when you, there's a reduction of the sexual spectrum when you just say that, like, characters can either be gay or straight.
Right. And if he's gay, he must be closeted. And
right.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's like when people say Jack is gay and that's why. Like that would lead to his going crazy and killing his wife.
Right.
Like, let's talk about the party.
So wait, before we get to that. So with Lily Sobieski, she doesn't really serve much of a purpose other than to show, like,
the world is full of perversion. Yeah.
But that's an interesting scene because he like almost does a noble thing.
Yeah.
By, like, kind of standing up for her and being like, you said you were going to call the police.
Right.
And, like, now you're pimping out your daughter.
Right.
But then he ultimately doesn't.
Right.
Like, what is that? Is that just, like, he has an impulse to, like, be a upstanding citizen, but he never kind of fully,
you know,
follows through with it?
Even though he's making decisions, he's sort of making them blindly. And he feels like a lot of the movie's happening to him. Watching it today, it occurred to me that the only time he seems to be like a protagonist who's pushing things ahead is when he's talking to Sidney Pollack at the end and he seems to be fighting it back a little bit.
Yeah.
And he's like, that girl died. How is it a charade if she died? Like, that's the only time, like, he raises his voice and he seems indignant about what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
And that's all.
Like, and that part when they're like, take off your mask. I mean, like, it's so scary. Well, and when they're like, what's the what's the other password?
Right. And you hear like this chant, like, like this chanting, and it's so creepy. Well, but that moment is so scary to me because he's like in one of the rooms, and then someone's like, can you come with me? And then he goes into a room, and then there's no music, and then he steps into the main room, and then we see his point of view, and everybody's looking at him. And then you hear the bum, 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 and it's just like, oh, he's so fucked right now. He's, and the mask, it's so scary. And
the masks are terrifying.
It reminded me of the Twilight Zone masks.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking.
And even like
some of them were really grotesque.
Yeah, and some of the shots, like, then they do like this montage of like people looking at him.
Yeah.
And all the masks looking at him.
Well, it's so scary. Well, because the mask is,
and
like,
you're thinking, like, who is this the president of the United States?
Right.
Like, who? Because there's that great line
where Zip was like, if I told you, you wouldn't sleep at night.
Yeah, he's like, these weren't normal people.
Yeah. It's so scary. Ugh. Yeah, there's something about like a mask provides you like a sense of anonymity.
Yeah.
But then when every other mask turns and looks at you, you're being seen.
Right. Exactly. And he's them all looking at him. And, you know, like, we haven't talked about dream imagery yet because it's almost so obvious. You know, it's based on a story called like Dream Novel.
Yeah.
But like, there is a dreaminess to it. That's like a nightmare.
Even the New York, everyone not looking being at you, quite New York.
Right, it's dreamy.
Adds to the dreaminess.
Right. And the way that...
And it seems like... it's almost like a Hanna-Barbera cartoon. It seems like he's walking and walking and walking, but it's the same street over and over again.
Well, yeah,
like,
there's that one really fake shot, which a lot of people make fun of, but I love, which is he's clearly like on a treadmill and there's like rear projection behind him. Yeah. And I think that might be right before he gets like accosted by those guys. And I love that because it's like, yes, it was done in reshoots, but I love... Kubrick has no problem making things look fake.
Right.
Like, what's wrong with something looking fake? Like, why in a movie like this would you need realism?
Right.
It even has that, like, it looks like sets from, like, old Hollywood where like, things are scaled down.
Uh-huh.
Like, even, like, it's just, like, it looks small.
Yeah.
Another moment that I think is almost like a jump scare is when he's being followed by that bald guy. And then he tries to get into a taxi and he turns a corner and the taxi goes off without him. And then you see the bald guy step into frame and you hear the bung, bung. Like, it's almost a jump scare. Like, oh, man, this guy's clearly trying to scare him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's scary.
It's a lot going on.
Defy genre.
Yes.
I was trying to like put my finger on like what I would call this movie.
I'd call it a psychosexual melodrama.
just that.
Yeah.
One of those.
I mean, it also has like, you know, yeah. I love, by the way, let's talk about the look of the movie. A lot of the images are overblown. So like the brights create halo effects.
It felt
and on the
way.
Christmas lights and the Christmas trees. I love the Christmas trees in the movie. Even the like dinky little Christmas tree in Domino's apartment. I love.
Well, yeah, it reminds a lot of like, especially in the beginning when they're at that party. Like, again, it reminded me a lot of The Shining ballroom.
Yes. Yes.
You know,
I
like
agree.
The bright lights and like the metallic, like the gold and silver.
Right, right, right.
Everything like over illuminated, like overlit.
Right.
Creating that halo effect.
Yeah.
Just like there's so many lights.
Yeah.
And there's that stairway where like just there's lights on the wall.
Yeah.
Like just crawling all the way up the
wall. Yeah.
It's really interesting.
It's beautiful.
To look at.
And it's like, but it's beautiful in this.
And it's interesting.
Disquieting way.
Yeah. It's interesting that in the novel, it's Mardi Gras.
Right.
And Mardi Gras has the masks.
Right, right. And, you know, Christmas is like, it's Christian and it's pure and it's about Jesus. And it even ends in F.A.O. Schwartz.
In a Toy Story, yeah.
Yeah, she holds up a Barbie doll. And
yeah.
Making Christmas uncanny is such an interesting choice that it makes.
So does he tell her everything?
I think he tells her everything.
Because it cuts.
Yeah.
And
she looks like Wendy from The Shining.
She does. I got the impression that they had been up all night talking.
Yes. I think he tells her everything.
Interesting.
I think that's the point.
Right.
He wanted a story.
Yeah. And then they go to shop together for Christmas.
Right. And then she says, there's one thing we should do. We should fuck.
Yeah.
Because that'll like... Because they have that very crazy conversation where they're like, She's like, he's like, what do you think we should do? And she's like, I think one night doesn't defy a whole marriage.
Right.
And I think, you know, I forget what she says, but she starts bringing up dreams.
Yeah.
And like something in a dream, reality in a dream.
Yeah.
And then she's like, we should be grateful that we made it through our adventures.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a dream that, and I mean, in Kubrick's sort of dark view of the world, maybe that's his positive. Like Kubrick remember once said, like, The Shining's a positive movie because it shows that there's life after death. Like, it's almost like Kubrick's positive take on, cynical but positive take on marriage, which is like, marriage is a dream that you choose to believe in.
Yeah.
You choose to believe that nothing could break this bond.
Right.
When something could break it.
Right.
It's I think you should see it again because I think it's a fascinating movie and I think it's full of stuff. And I think Kubrick's directing style with actors is almost never better than that movie because pushing everybody to the brink of doing everything a million times almost creates the dreaminess.
Yeah.
Like when they're smoking weed and she's doing her monologue, she's doing it in this weird slow way.
Yeah.
That's almost exhausted. It's very dreamy.
She's tired through the whole movie.
Right.
She's always yawning.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something that I picked up on.
Yeah.
You know, they do have a small child.
Yeah.
And the, you know, she's either sleeping or she's waking or she's right about to sleep or she's tired. I mean, it's exhausting to be parents to
yes.
young kids.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I think that's part of it.
Hmm. You know what I thought about this time when I watched it this morning again? I watched it twice this week. She immediately starts drinking heavily at the party.
I was thinking that too. Like, is she supposed to have a drinking problem?
Right. And she brings up that she worked in a gallery, but it went under.
Yeah.
So she seems a little bit more lost than him.
Yeah.
And but think about how she's acting when she's dancing with that Hungarian guy.
Yeah.
She's talking so slow.
Yeah.
And they're like right in each other's faces.
Yeah.
And she's like, he's like, I need to see you again. And she's like, I'm married.
Yeah. Yeah. But she I mean, is she trying to make, she's trying to make him jealous? Is it self-validation?
Well yeah, maybe because she sees the two models
yeah,
first.
Yeah.
But I think she does wanna, she is charmed by that guy. And I think what he does is very weird, which is his like opening move is he picks up her drink and drinks from it.
Yeah, it's weird.
But again, that makes me think of class. Like,
yeah.
I can take yours.
Yeah.
I can take your food. I can
right.
take anything from
And then
you.
It's so bold that like he's known her for like 5 minutes and he's like, why would you be married to that person?
Right. And he also says something crazy where he goes, do you know why people get married or why people used to get married? Because they wanted to lose their virginity before they can go and have sex with other people.
Yeah.
Which is... no,
right.
But it's a crazy way to think about
yeah.
marriage. It's, but again, he could be. See, I would believe he's at the party.
Yeah,
he's at the party with the masks.
Yeah,
because he seems like a powerful man who doesn't care that he's hitting on a person's wife.
No, he doesn't care.
In open,
and basically, he just. I feel like through his dialogue, he implies like you are better than him.
Right.
Like you should. I want to fuck you, and I'm better than him.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's wild, wild stuff.
I wonder if it's,
yeah,
was Stanley Kubrick happy with it?
I don't know.
Does anybody know?
I don't know. I think he probably would have kept tweaking it and fucking with it, you know. And I don't know. What I don't know is who made the decision to put in the people blocking the explicit sex. If that was something that he wanted or something that the studio added after he died. You know, maybe he would have fought harder to not get that. Because it would, I think if you saw the explicit fucking, it would raise the creep factor up a
yeah.
level. Because even in the scenes where there's sex, it's cold and unerotic.
Yeah.
It's not a sexy movie.
It's like, it's animalistic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the people who are fucking, they're like right in the middle of like really going at it.
Yeah, right, exactly. And then people are just sort of watching
it them. Yeah.
In a very like almost like blasé way. It's very weird.
And then there's that scene where they're like slow dancing.
Yes.
And couple's a lesbian couple, one couple's a gay couple. It's interesting.
But it's also like...
Some of them are naked, some of them aren't.
Like, what is this for you?
Yeah.
And I also was thinking like, why... I guess the naked people are sex workers,
yeah,
right?
That's what I assume.
Why do they wear masks?
Yeah.
What would be the reason for them to wear a mask?
I guess so that there's like plausible deniability of like, I don't even know who you are.
I guess. It's really,
or it's just like a weird fetish.
Well, yeah, I do like that. It's like scary and weird.
Yeah,
like it makes,
well, because that's the thing. Very, it's like scary. His and weird mask is revealing, but kind of sort of blank.
Yeah.
Why do some of them wear like grotesque masks?
Right. Right.
You know, like some of the masks are just downright scary.
Right. Or they're like screaming faces. Yeah. Yeah. And stuff. Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like there's so much to talk about with this movie. I'm just looking through my notes to see if there's anything that I wanted to bring up that I didn't. Because I was just, you know, as I was watching it today, I was like, I'll take notes now. But I don't want to like do close reading because it'll take me forever. I just want to like questions that come into my mind. Here's a question. What do you think the title means?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's a play on Eyes Wide Open.
Yes.
I'm assuming it has something to do with, like, ignorance of some kind. Or, like, moving through life without being observant. Or
buying into the dream.
Yeah, ignorant of what's out there. Or of reality or something. I don't know.
Okay.
That's how I read it. And also, it... Mm-hmm. You know, it lends itself to like the dreaming thing.
Yeah,
like your eyes are shut when you're asleep.
Yeah,
so eyes wide shut.
Right.
It's like you're asleep, but seeing through. It's like seeing in your dream.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe. Something the part that I always forget about when I watch this movie, and I feel like almost you can cut out, is the stuff with the patient who dies and his daughter.
Yeah, what I it's in the original novel.
Okay.
But then when I was reading the synopsis of that novel, that character comes back later. And I think that the summary I read said like the main character like reaches out to her again and yet now she feels differently about him.
Hmm.
I don't know. It's weird. You could look it up or I could pull it up. But she does, that character does come back. Maybe it was a scene that was cut.
There's a scene later on where he calls her house.
Right. And then the husband.
The husband, Greg from Dharma and Greg.
Yeah. Yeah.
Answers the phone and he just doesn't say anything, which again is very flaccid.
Right. So but why would he have said calling?
Something? Right. Would he be like, can we meet up?
Yeah,
it's clearly weird. She's the father's doctor, and like yes. She's trauma bonded to Tom Cruise because right. He's very handsome, and he was there when her father's dying.
Right,
like that's why she thinks she loves him.
Right,
but that's an interesting scene because it makes me think about like what people need from love.
Uh-huh.
Like she needs, she feels like she needs him because he gave her comfort through this hard time.
Yeah.
And it's like, what do other people need?
Right.
You know, these rich people, maybe they don't need anything but just the physical act of sex. And they don't mind someone dying. They don't mind someone being disposable.
Yeah.
It also like reminds me of just Kubrick imagery. It reminds me of the end of 2001 when he's in the bed before he becomes the star child.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because he's in this very ornate looking, but like clearly they're also a very wealthy family.
Yeah, for sure. What else do you got? I'm trying to find this.
Let's see.
Maybe she doesn't come back. So I'm looking now at the summary and I don't see it again. I thought I read that.
Do you have, would you say you have a favorite scene?
I don't know. I don't think so. Do you?
Yeah, I think it's the scene at the end with Ziegler. I like, because I like Ziegler's mask coming off.
It feels like a he's coming back. Remind me a bit of that scene at the end of Psycho, where the guy, like, the psychologist explains.
No, I disagree, because I hate that scene.
I do too, but it felt like similar in the way that it's like, okay, now we're down to earth.
Oh, okay, I see what you mean. See, I like it because Ziegler's got this. Oh, I'm...
Oh, sorry. To cut you off. In the original, yeah, he visits Marianne again, but she no longer expresses any interest in him.
Hmm.
So he does, in like his second round in the book, he goes back to her.
Interesting.
And in the movie, it's he calls and the husband picks up and that's it. But in the book, he speaks to her, but she's no longer interested in him.
Interesting.
Which is weird.
Interesting.
Like, again, he's like looking for validation from a lot of people, right. It feels like.
And she says her... Well, she's not her husband yet. She's going to marry him. She says he's a math professor. So, like, a doctor would be a step up in class from that?
Yeah.
Or at least in economic, whatever. Yeah.
Sorry.
Ziegler comes off as, like... And you've met rich people like this. Like, I'm a down-to-earth. I'm a guy. Hey, buddy, thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Like, I'm clearly very rich and powerful, but I'm not making a big deal about it. I'm making, you know, oh, you like that scotch? I'll send you over a case.
Yeah.
But then the more he gets into talking to Tom Cruise... His mask kind of slips off and he's becoming more crude. He's like, oh, the girl with the great tits.
Yeah.
Probably fucking her. But,
yeah.
You know, like she was a drug addict. Like,
and he becomes like vaguely threatening.
Yes. Too. Yes. Yeah. But I realized even in the beginning when he's being super nice, he's threatening. When Tom Cruise helps him with the girl in the bathroom, he's like, I know I don't need to tell you this, but this is obviously
between us. Yeah.
That's clearly a threat.
Yeah.
And I just love like.
And he's summoned.
Yes.
To him.
Right. And he's brought to his door and he's like, oh, thanks for coming. And it's like. Yeah.
You sent somebody. Yeah.
Right. And there's a lot of that. There's a lot of summoning.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of manners in it.
Yeah.
Like people performing a certain like etiquette.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the movie seems to be have two color schemes. There's like the very hot colors and like red and then the very cool colors. And I like that he's got like the red pool table.
Yeah.
He's like the way he's playing with the ball. Is very like, I don't know, like just powerful. Like,
yeah,
I,
suggestive like, of like, I'm in control of this
right,
game.
Right.
Yeah.
And the way they're like walking around each other as they talk. And
yeah.
Even in the end, when like he kind of convinces Tom Cruise to give it up, he like hits him on the shoulder in a way that's super friendly, but also kind of threatening. And he's like, everybody dies, but you know that.
Right.
He's like, go home, forget. This is your last warning. Like, just literally go home and forget about this.
Yeah, or else you're gonna.
Or you will die.
Yeah.
So you know, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah.
Why do you think she did the Mandy did that for him?
If that is Mandy, I guess.
If it's Mandy, I guess she was just sort of suicidal.
Or she really felt like he saved her.
So she owed him.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Or Ziegler's right. It was a charade to scare him. She didn't really die. Not that I believe that.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. It's sort of like... It's whatever movie you think it is.
Yeah.
You could choose to... And that's maybe why there's so many crazy theories about it. You know, some people... we haven't talked about MK Ultra. Some people see it as like... I'm not a great conspiracy theorist, so excuse me, but... There's this belief that, like, the military, like, did a brainwashing program during the Cold War, and they would use, they'd give you acid and then, like, brainwash you.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, supposedly, like, Marilyn Monroe is involved in that somehow.
Yeah.
And, like, they say, like, Lee Sobieski's involved. Like, she's one of these, like, drone people.
That's weird.
Right. Well,
but she does have, like, a strange affect.
Right. Like, she smiles.
She's smiling through the whole thing.
Yeah. No, she certainly does. But I guess what I'm saying is it's the movie you want it to be. And that's why maybe there's so much crazy theorizing.
Yeah.
That some people, it's like, oh, that's a movie about the Illuminati. Or that's a movie about this. In some ways, I think you can read this as a movie about Scientology.
Yeah.
Kubrick could have fooled him into doing a movie about Scientology.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you not think about Scientology when you think about a cabal of...
Rich
people with a great
religion. Yeah.
It's really fascinating.
And it's a great Christmas film.
Absolutely. And you know, happy holidays to everybody.
Thanks. It's got a coziness to it.
Thanks for listening to it does in a way. thanks for listening to PCMC. We come out every week. I hope you guys have a good holiday. Anthony, we end every episode by saying
go bye-bye.